I grew up a day's drive from my grandparents, upstate New York to Michigan, but some of my favorite memories growing up are with them. Fishing with my grandpa, making pies with my grandma, playing endless rounds of Quiddler and Scrabble together. When I was deciding where to go to college, the fact that my grandparents lived in Michigan was a not insignificant part of the reason I chose to move there. I could move to another state, but still feel in some ways very close to home. Every Sunday when I was in college, my grandma would get home from church and she'd cook a big meal, and my grandparents would invite me over to their condo to join them. I was never alone, though. They would always say, "Invite everyone you know. Everyone is welcome." And so I'd call my grandma every Saturday to tell her about how many people would show up that week. We'd get a break from dining hall food, and over ham and cheesy potatoes, my grandparents would talk with my friends and me every Sunday as if it were the most important thing in the world. Over that dinner table, we figured out our majors. We shared our travel abroad stories. We constantly helped my grandpa troubleshoot his computer's never-ending tech issues. One Easter, I realized that a handful of people in my residence hall didn't have family in town or anywhere to eat dinner, so we added leaves to the table, and my grandma got some more potatoes roasting, and everyone was welcome. In the uncertain and sometimes lonely college years, it was a place of connection. I spent a few years away from Michigan after college, and during those years, my grandma died. When I moved back to Michigan, my grandpa and I wanted to start our Sunday dinners back up. But my grandpa, bless him, was a terrible cook. His idea of dinner was heating up the same Caffè steamer meal every evening. Now, I am an okay cook, but I was in the midst of learning to navigate life within the limits of some new chronic health conditions, and standing up to cook often took a lot more energy than I had. So some of the friends who'd gathered around my grandparents' table with me in college were still in town, and they would come over too and make themselves at home in my grandpa's kitchen, cooking for all of us when I was too tired or my church job went late on a Sunday, as it often does. We had new conversations around the table about navigating life in your mid-20s, about relationships and vocation and grief. And of course, still helped my grandpa with his computer tech issues. They're eternal. During that undefined time in our mid-20s, when we had no idea what we were doing or where we were gonna go next, that table was still a place of connection, of welcome, and of hospitality in an uncertain world. We read just a few verses of that story of Mary and Elizabeth today. And I think that this story, at its heart, is a story too about connection in an uncertain world. I'll admit up front that reading this particular passage might be liturgically a strange choice for the week after Christmas, since this does all happen before Jesus is born. But in our Sanctified Art series, Words for the Beginning, we missed a Sunday because of our Christmas pageant. And as I thought about this uncertain year ahead of us, I really wanted to go back to that phrase, "We don't go alone." Just to give a quick refresher on Elizabeth's story before we meet her in this passage, she's described as Mary's cousin or relative. We don't know exactly how close their relationship was. Elizabeth didn't have children, though she wanted them. And an angel appears to her husband Zechariah, telling him they will have a son. Zechariah, despite being a priest and actually seeing an angel, does not believe what the angel says. So he's temporarily unable to speak until the baby is born. It's a bit of a weird story. If you've been around the past few weeks, you don't need as much of a refresher on Mary, right? She's a young girl, she's engaged to Joseph, Gabriel appears to her, you'll have a son, God with him, name him Jesus, etc. I want to highlight, though, that when Gabriel appears to Mary, Gabriel doesn't say a lot. I would have wanted more details. But Gabriel does make a point of mentioning that Elizabeth is expecting two in a similar sort of divine intervention situation. You might remember that Gabriel mentions this from our Gen Z translation during the pageant, when Ella read for us that Elizabeth was older than a boomer. So after Gabriel visits Mary, Mary then goes to visit Elizabeth, and that's where we land for today's passage. Mary sets out and goes with haste. You can imagine she's traveling as quickly as she can. Her head must be swimming with questions, maybe with some doubts. What if she imagined this? What if it was a dream? What would happen with her and Joseph? The angel had mentioned Elizabeth. Maybe she'd have some answers. And immediately, Elizabeth greets her enthusiastically and echoes some of the angel's words to Mary. And I love that what she immediately speaks is a blessing. From an older woman to a younger one, she says, "You are blessed. You are a blessing. Your story and your child will be a blessing." And Mary responds to this blessing with a song, which we read last week Sunday. She sings about God bringing down the powerful and lifting up the lowly, about remembering mercy and coming to the aid of God's children. Mary and Elizabeth each have their own stories, so I think I've missed before when I've read this just what a gift it must have been for them to connect with each other in this place, in this way. They're each in a completely unexpected situation, one that I imagine was difficult to explain to their neighbors, one that was surely stretching their ideas about God and completely upending what they thought their own lives would look like. And Mary walks through Elizabeth's door, and Elizabeth sees her and blesses her. We read later that Mary stays with Elizabeth for about 3 months. They're able to practically support each other, to understand each other's situation, to share their joys and their questions too, probably. They're on the brink of everything changing, but they're not alone. This gift of connection, though, goes beyond just practical support. One of the things that struck me about this story's timeline when I read it all the way through is that Mary doesn't sing her song about God lifting up the lowly after the angel Gabriel leaves her. She travels to see Elizabeth, and it is only when they are together, when Elizabeth has recognized her and blessed her, that Mary begins saying, "My soul magnifies God." Last week, Karen described Mary's song as God putting the words into the voice of a young girl and singing the world back home. I love that phrase, so I will keep using it. That's Karen's. So it's not simply God's promise to Mary that is the catalyst for her song. It's Mary's connection with Elizabeth. It's their shared joy. It's the blessing that Elizabeth has spoken over her that gives her the courage to begin singing. God's words became Mary's as she began to sing the world back home, as she and Elizabeth together believed and celebrated. They didn't go alone. And it's through their stories that we read about God come to dwell on earth as love with us. Recently, I've been reading a book called Emergent Strategy by Adrienne Marie Brown, and it's given me some new and helpful language about the importance of interconnectedness, of community, both in our own personal lives and in any activism and organizing work we're involved in. Adrienne Marie Brown is a queer Black writer, activist, organizer, singer-songwriter, doula, and science fiction scholar, among other things. And in the first page of this book, she writes, quote, "Here you are, in the cycle between the past and the future, choosing to spend your miraculous time in the exploration of how humans, especially those seeking to grow liberation and justice, can learn from the world around us how to best collaborate, how to shape change." End quote. I won't be able to do justice here to the full idea of emergent strategy. There are a lot of layers and conversation partners in this book. But we begin with the framework of emergence, and this is the definition that the book uses from Nick Obolensky. Emergence is the way complex systems and patterns arise out of a multiplicity of relatively simple interactions. So complexity coming out of simplicity. Adrienne Marie Brown goes on to list examples of what she means by this. She talks about migratory birds who don't have a plan or a pecking list, but a shared instinct. They're each a relatively simple part of what becomes a long journey with complex choreography, only possible for many species of birds when they stay together. Or she talks about root systems of oak trees, about which she writes, quote, "Under the earth, always they reach for each other. They grow such that their roots are intertwined and create a system of strength that is as resilient on a sunny day as it is in a hurricane." End quote. And she lists other things, dandelions and caterpillars and cells, before she makes an explicit case for why this idea of emergence, simple interactions woven together in complex patterns, might matter for our lives and for our work. She writes, "Many of us have been socialized to understand that constant growth, violent competition, and critical mass are the ways that we create change. But emergence shows us that adaptation and evolution depend more upon critical, deep, and authentic connections, a thread that can be tugged for support and resilience. Dare I say, love." End quote. I love this image of connection with each other in an uncertain world as a thread of love that we can tug on, a thread that travels not just through our close circles, but outside them too, a thread that we can't lose, but that will keep pulling us back towards one another. This love isn't a substitute for the work of justice and peace we're called to. It's not love that lets us stay in our own silos, content to protect only ourselves. Instead, it calls us deeper into community, into doing work for justice, not primarily because of what we hate or what we're afraid of or what we want to defeat, but because of what we love and because of who we love. When Mary travels to go see Elizabeth, she finds connection and community during a time that must have felt overwhelming, when her world had been turned upside down by the appearance of an angel and the strange promise that her story was somehow part of love coming down to earth. Together, Mary and Elizabeth bless each other. When they are together, we hear the echo of a song beginning. Together they hold joy and imagination. Together their stories are woven, a testament to the power of connection and of love in an uncertain world. I began by talking about connection around my grandparents' table. My grandpa died unexpectedly a few years ago. My mom was undergoing a particularly intense cycle of chemotherapy for cancer treatment at the time, and we were in the middle of a global pandemic. It literally felt like the world was falling apart. When we traveled to Michigan for the memorial service, many of my dear friends from around the dinner table all those years ago showed up to the service, and they wept with us. It didn't lessen the grief, but it was a gift to hold that love together, just as we'd held it around our table for many years. In the grand scheme of things, our stories of connection around a table and grief around a casket might seem small. They don't insulate us from loneliness. They don't protect us from pain. They don't immediately change legislation or transform oppressive systems. But in a world that is full of uncertainty, on the brink of a new year filled with who knows what, I just don't think that any practice of love and hope, of connection and solidarity, is too small to matter. Our lives are built from the small patterns of stubbornly showing up for one another, around dinner tables, at hospitals, at marches, and right here in this building. It is the small things that will help us weather the storm. We give help, and we learn to accept it ourselves, We love others in the world around us, and we keep learning to believe that we too are beloved. Like migratory birds flying together in a V, like complex root systems that reach for each other under the ground, like Mary and Elizabeth, we don't go alone. Together, we celebrate and we mourn. We watch and we pray, we work and we rest, and we always bless each other. Together, we remember the unexpected hope of a tiny baby born in a stable. God come close to us, love that knows our name. Together, we join hands and we raise our voices in a chorus as we begin to sing the world back home. Amen.